This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Jerry Flanagan, who's a consumer advocate at the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights in Santa Monica, California. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thanks.
Give us just a really short background about the foundation, what it is, what it does, how it's supported.
Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, nonpartisan group that works on taxpayer and consumer issues, protecting consumers when their pocketbooks are threatened. We work on issues from auto insurance to health care, and we're funded primarily through foundations and some individual membership support.
Okay. Now, you were just very instrumental in helping Los Angeles pass the LA Rex legislation. What's involved with that?
LARX is a prescription drug discount program that the city of Los Angeles would administer, and it's the first time in the country that a city has taken the lead to negotiate prescription drug discounts. And essentially, it's the Costco approach to prescription drugs. A large city like Los Angeles, with 3.6 million people, has a lot of buying power and uses that buying power to negotiate lower prices. Right now, some counties, multiple states have come together to do bulk purchasing and discounting, but this LA will be the first city to have such a program in place.
Who all is going to be eligible to participate in the plan?
Anyone actually would be eligible to be included in the plan, including insured and uninsured people. Business owners can sign up on behalf of their employees. There's no restrictions on age or income or insurance status.
Do people have to be residents of the city of Los Angeles?
No, they do not. This is what's interesting. The model, there shouldn't be any restrictions for LA County residents to be involved, anyone in the city of Los Angeles. The models that have been put in place on the East Coast at the county level actually allow people from even outside the county, outside the state, to join.
Right.
It comes down to which pharmacies participate in the program. So it could very well be a program after the initial stages that any Californian would be eligible for, but based at the city level.
So essentially, the city is going to negotiate deals with both small pharmacies and large chains to work with them?
Well, the process is similar to what insurance companies and large employers do right now. The first step, the first part of the program, will use a PBM, a pharmacy benefits manager, that sets up pharmacy networks, but also negotiates discounts with the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So
essentially, the city is going to go to Pfizer and Merck and those companies and say, we're going to need 400,000 doses of Prozac and this much Nexium, and we'd like to get your best price on that.
Right. Initially, the city will look to hire a pharmacy benefits manager, which specializes in these negotiations with drug companies.
Right.
Ideally, you know, as this program gets underway, we'd like to form our own PBM or to negotiate directly with the pharmaceutical companies at the city level, because it'd be less overhead costs if you can do it that way. That takes some expertise, so at least in the beginning we'll utilize one of these PBMs to do the negotiations. The exciting thing about this, though, is that as LA starts the program, cities like San Francisco, Philadelphia, we even got a call from Detroit the other day, are interested in similar programs. Nothing would limit these cities then to band together and
right.
form a larger pool.
Right.
And of course, the insurance companies are getting really nervous, because the larger the purchasing pool, there's a greater threat to the drug companies that they actually have to negotiate for a fair price, versus the current market where a handful of drug companies control all the patents for prescriptions and can charge whatever they want.
Okay. Now, in a radio discussion you had about this a few days ago, you used the term monopsony. Tell our listeners what monopsony is.
Sure. And we had this idea was floated in a piece of legislation that Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed last year, AB 1958. In one of the hearings, the pharmaceutical company representative, the lobbyist, said, you know, this bill's unfair, because it forms a monopsony, which is a monopoly of consumers.
Right.
That's good news for consumers, because what it means is that the current market is turned on head, where we have now five or six pharmaceutical companies that controlled all the patents and set prices at whatever level they would like. Monopsony means that when consumers band together, there's one buyer, And the pharmaceutical companies have to negotiate with that buyer if they want to sell their product. Similar to what Costco does, although it's not a monopsony, it's a large purchaser, buys a lot in bulk, and because of that, because of those bulk purchases, Costco gets a good price for rolls of toilet paper or tires.
Right. Now, monopsony is a Latin word, but I think in a more Anglo-Saxon way, a single payer is also a synonym for monopsony in a way, isn't it?
I think it conceptually it means essentially the same thing. You know, in the way that we think about it in bulk purchasing, a single payer or a single buyer representing a lot of consumers.
Right.
What we're trying to communicate there is that it's consumers banding together to increase their purchasing power. Very much a market savvy,
right,
kind of capitalistic approach that, you know, that business owners do on a daily basis when they negotiate a bulk rate for paper clips or glass for their auto repair.
When Walmart goes to buy its products.
Sure. Yeah. When Walmart goes to buy, it not only buys on behalf of all those consumers for rolls of toilet paper, it's also buying on behalf of all the Walmart stores in its chain.
Right.
So it's buying a large quantity. It's a single buyer buying a large quantity, and when that happens, instead of paying $5 for a tire or a roll of toilet paper, whatever it might be, you're going to bargain for $2.50 because you are buying in large quantities.
So in fact, this is the same economic principles that are used when Walmart says we have 5 million customers that are going to buy this much stuff. We go to China and say, you know, we're going to buy this much on behalf of all those people. It's the same principle when the city of Los Angeles says we're an entity. We're going to gather up all of our residents and aggregate their demand and then present a single negotiating face to the suppliers.
Yeah. It's very similar to what the Department of Veteran Affairs does right now for prescription drugs. The VA represents 39 million Americans, and when they purchase prescriptions, they get a discount of between 40% and 70% off on the retail price of a drug because they represent a large pool of individuals.
Right.
It's interesting to note here, though, although we have a good model under the Veterans Affairs Department nationally, the Medicare prescription drug program was literally banned from negotiating discounts.
So
even though it's larger,
it was effectively an anti-monopsony law.
Right, and the drug companies obviously love this because the prescription drug benefit guaranteed profits to them by, you know, encouraging guaranteeing a larger access to prescription drugs, but allowing the drug companies to charge whatever they want. It's literally like as if the 41 million member Medicare program went down to the local pharmacy and bought those drugs one at a time off the shelf.
At retail. In fact, what you were talking about aggregating demand in order to give consumers more power, goes back at least in contemporary history as far back as the Berkeley cheese conspiracy, in which 20 people in a neighborhood would get together and say, we want to buy some cheddar cheese. We're going to go down to the directly to the cheese supplier and buy a really big brick of it, and then at a lower price per volume, and then break it up into 20 parts and give it to our the members of our conspiracy.
That's right, and it really the approach really spans the political and social spectrum. Last year, GM and several large auto manufacturers announced that they were going to band together to buy bulk purchase and negotiate lower costs on health insurance and prescription drugs. So it's a strategy that
everyone's getting into
ubiquitous,
the act.
You know, except that the federal government banned it because the drug companies wanted it that way. But as a business, it's a common sense approach to getting a better price on a commodity.
Okay, now. The general principle, getting a better price on a commodity. There are other commodities besides medical insurance and pharmaceutical products that this might apply to, and I wanted to get your take on that. We do a lot of coverage here of broadband access through mm-hmm. DSL or cable or wireless. And in fact, now that I think about it, the case in Philadelphia, where the people of Philadelphia are organizing themselves through their government to provide themselves with broadband through a Wi-Fi network, and being drastically opposed by the telephone companies and the cable companies on the legislative front to do that, leads to the possibility that people could band together in buying clubs to provide themselves with internet access, either through DSL or broadband, or broadband from cable or Wi-Fi. What's your take on that?
Well, I think the concept absolutely applies. You know, the one difference between cable and pharmaceutical companies is that, at least in name, cable and DSL access is regulated.
Right.
Although I certainly will make the argument that the regulation has not been effective at all at keeping the prices fair.
Well, it's been effective at keeping the prices at $26 for a cable and $26 for a phone.
Right, and non-competitive. So
right.
It's still the problem in cable and pharma. That's an uncompetitive marketplace.
Right.
And in cable, you've got a regulation that's not keeping prices affordable.
Right.
So I think it's the same kind of revolution that you see at a city or at a community level, where you know individuals band together to say, you know, this is ridiculous. We can do better by buying in bulk. So I think the concept certainly applies, and it's a strategy that may be used in to wrestle control away from large corporations that have terminated the marketplace, where
right.
there isn't really any competition,
right.
including health insurance as well, something we're looking at.
Okay, and in fact, while federal legislation has banned the federal government from doing this negotiation, there are no, at least at the present, legislative or statutory or judicial precedents that would interfere with monopsony being more widely employed by people for broadband service, telephone service, cable TV service, or let's get to a crucial commodity in American society, gasoline. The oil companies are making astronomically record profits, given that the price of
right.
oil is going up. Is there any reason conceptually why everyone in Los Angeles couldn't be organized into a gasoline buying cooperative and say, we're going to buy 10 million gallons of gasoline this week, and go to the oligopoly providers and say, you give us a good deal, Unocal, or we're going to... Of course, they're all being bought up, so there's only two or three left, but... Is there any theoretical reason why that couldn't be done?
Not generally speaking, although when you talk about, there's particular problems in gasoline in California, where there's not, the gasoline companies, oil companies, have kept the refining capacity at a minimum in California
right.
In order to drive costs up.
I thought it was because of environmentalists who didn't want to.
No, it's because there's been a lot of debate over, you know, Shell recently wanted to close a refinery in Bakersfield,
right.
Claiming it wasn't profitable. But really what it was is that it was making a lot of money, but they wanted to keep supply down. So that's a roadblock there. But for the idea of monopsony is something we can't ultimately achieve at the local level, because monopsony literally means one buyer.
Right.
But what we can do is get bulk purchasing and aggregate buying power that I think can be applied to a lot of different consumer products. And the local revolutions that are happening around this idea of bulk purchasing stem from the fact that the market has failed to provide any kind of competition in a lot of these markets, where we see, you know, huge mergers in health insurance and cable companies, even some of these markets that are regulated, the costs aren't at the, you know, are far above what the product is worth.
In fact,
one way to counter that.
Right. In fact, in terms of suppliers, aggregation at the producer level of oil companies, entertainment conglomerates. All at the corporate provider level, the number of providers is shrinking.
Right.
Therefore, providing more control there, but at the same time, the growth of monopsony hasn't been keeping pace with that, so that the balance has been shifting to the few providers rather than the many purchasers.
Right. You know, it's been a general trend that large corporate interests emerged, and the result is that you have a market failure. Either you're going to regulate that well to keep the costs fair, treat it like a monopoly.
Right.
Like we used to keep energy costs down in California until we deregulated, and people know what happened then. We
right.
had the rolling blackouts.
Right.
Well, we're having rolling blackouts in a lot of consumer products. People can't afford health insurance. We have six insurers that
right.
control 84% of the market. So this is a general discontent with the market that and the high cost. The other flip side, the other thing you can do other than bulk purchasing is real regulation. And one good example in California is the auto insurance market, where under Prop 103, we require insurance companies to justify premium increases before they're allowed to put those into place.
So in fact, a growing tendency towards monopsony would encourage and provide as an present as an alternative better, more effective regulation.
I would think either is in some markets we certainly need more regulation. For instance, if you applied just bulk purchasing to the health insurance market,
right.
Where you're buying healthcare through the insurance companies, you have to have some regulation in there as well, because right now the insurance companies are taking a big chunk of every dollar to pay for overhead costs, and
right.
There would still be that tendency under a bulk purchasing concept.
Okay. So some combination of buyer co-ops and good regulation. Absolutely.
Now that's the American way. It's a very market savvy principle of banding together to get the biggest purchaser and negotiating for the best price.
Okay, talk about two other aspects. What's the role of technology generally and the internet specifically in making this possible? If you've got 100,000 people and they need eBay aggregates demand and distributes it and does all kinds of things with that. What's the potential of the internet as a way for people to sign up and say,
right.
I want this much gasoline, this much cable TV service, and this much broadband, and have another 100,000 people also sign up,
right.
And then have some group like your group or the City of Los Angeles represent that aggregate of demand?
But it's an interesting approach, obviously, because unlike the LARX, where we're literally talking about a single city that's connected and therefore it's organized as a single entity.
Right.
With technology, it allows us to then connect those individuals
right.
or pools. So
right.
LA with Philadelphia or right. someone in California can join a virtual purchasing pool with someone in Minnesota.
Right.
They don't need to be in the same place.
In other words, people can be aggregated according to their demand. People around the country, around the world, who want to buy a certain thing can say, we want to join the global broadband conspiracy, and we want to buy broadband, and here are 10 million of us. We'd have a lot of purchasing power.
Yeah, and then the one roadblock there, and I think you can get around it, is that if people are buying or registering for one product, but they're in different locations,
right.
the supply of that. So, for instance, if like for gasoline, we don't have it. Because of the deficit in refining capacity in California,
right.
that's something that has to be addressed before we can have the cost would be the same.
Right, but in the same way that the internet can be used to aggregate the demand, and as I think you've explained in terms of the pharmacy policy, once the city negotiates either with the drug manufacturers or with the pharmacies, then people will have this card that identifies them as a member of that group, and they can go into any local pharmacy
mm-hmm.
and say, I'm a member of the LARX program, please give me that discount. Electronically, it's almost immaterial whether people live in the City of Los Angeles, the County of Los Angeles, the United States, or anywhere in the world, because these groups can be created virtually, electronically, and globally, both for the aggregation of demand and on the supplying side, to say, here's my digital ID card, I'm a member of the global broadband conspiracy, please give me my service.
Right, as long as you're in a community with a pharmacy. I think the concept absolutely applies. I think it doesn't get government off the hook for making the market keeping the market fair,
right.
which they've like in health insurance and gasoline failed to do. So
right.
I think they're bookends, but bulk purchasing and aggregating buying power not only gets a good price, but it sends a real message to our elected officials that there's a revolution here to do what the government regulators have failed to do, to make prescription drugs affordable or gasoline affordable. And I think that also sends a political message to those elected leaders that, they better look to ways to find to make these products affordable, or they may be out of a job soon.
Right. And in fact, we've only been talking about price, but obviously the same principle could work in terms of features and say we don't want our cable service bundled. We don't want to have to buy things we don't want if we don't want them. It could be negotiations could proceed along any number of dimensions for the in the purchasing as well as price.
Right. I think that's correct. Until the cable level, the cable companies have been operating under a sort of a pseudo regulation for so long,
right.
It would be a pretty alarming wake up call if people decided, you know, sent the message that we're going to stop buying cable from you until you offer a better service. Now, that requires, bulk purchasing requires a strategic approach by that group. So we have to make sure everyone agrees to the
right,
standards.
Exactly. Especially because, for example, now with broadband internet video delivery, there are multiple technical options for people who want to get their video programming. They don't have to get it from cable. The phone companies, all the phone companies with building fiber optic to the premises and to the node are investing tens of billions of dollars in becoming video delivery services themselves. And the cities that provide Wi-Fi networks, Philadelphia, maybe part in some ways Los Angeles, there are now at least three different ways that people can get their video. And so the idea of a video aggregate group to purchase that in bulk makes even more sense, as multiple technologies provide different ways to provide the same service.
Yeah, you're talking about even a further collapse of the marketplace, where there's both horizontal and vertical monopolies.
Right.
Single companies owning many technologies,
right.
and only a handful of them offering the services.
Entertainment, for example, Viacom and NBC Universal, owned by General Electric, and so on, that say Disney owning ABC. All of the media conglomerates are also involved, are part of larger corporations as well, and so that heightens the need, it seems to me, for a countervailing force in the part of the consumers.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, in addition to bulk purchasing and aggregating buying power, I think we have to aggregate market oversight as well. I mean, as more and more consumers become involved in buying clubs, I think those consumers should also be part of the public oversight of how government regulates the market.
Right.
Public, but independent public oversight
who knows more
of a collapsing market is necessary.
Right. Who knows more about how to regulate the market in video services than the buying club that buys more of it than anybody else?
Right, and also doesn't have any political affiliations or relies on the campaign contributions of those that are regulated.
Do you think this could undercut the internet is famous for disintermediation? Could this lead to the disintermediation of those political individuals, parties, groups whose function it is to take money from corporations and pass laws to benefit them and then sell it to the public, so that those functions could pass over to these buying collectives?
Well, I mean, theoretically, I think we've got a long way to go. I think the tricky, the right approach is to focus on specific buying pools or purchasing collaboratives that are focused on some of the worst offenders in the market.
Is there any danger that, in the same way that Verizon tried to stop Philadelphia from buying broadband by itself in bulk, that efforts would be launched to delegitimize, criminalize, or otherwise limit efforts towards monopsony?
Well, again, I would focus, instead of calling it monopsony, I think I really call it bulk purchasing, because monopsony once we organize the entire nation, then we'll have monopsony.
Right.
But absolutely, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, for instance, in this issue, are scared of being forced to negotiate with large buyers, so they'll do anything they can. Ultimately, though, the drug companies want to sell their products. So, there's really a trade-off here. The interesting thing about these pools, when they start locally, for instance, with the drug companies, at one level, the drug companies look at these and say, well, you know, that's a way that I'm going to sell more drugs.
Right.
Because there's uninsured members of the community that couldn't afford prescriptions in the past. But as those pools get larger, there's an argument you made because these buying clubs start small and then grow locally, that they have a greater chance of surviving challenges. Because when they get large enough
There's a tipping point.
There is a tipping point.
From the point of view of the corporations, that it benefits them up to a certain point, and after another, at that point forward, it disadvantages them.
Right, and I think that's for the front, and going back to drugs particularly, that the front lines for the drug reform debate are in the cities. You know, we see Sacramento and Washington, D.C. really in a gridlock over prescription drug reform, and inundated with pharmaceutical lobbyists. The cities, though, have really sat out a lot of these consumer debates about how they can control costs, but it really comes down to size. So, you know, the 3.6 million people in city of Los Angeles and with a 9.4 or so in the LA County,
right.
LA County, what being larger than 41 states, has a tremendous amount of purchasing power.
And it's a matter of
organizing that purchasing power and focusing it.
And in fact, then when the cities aggregate themselves, then that becomes a crucial tipping point as well.
I think so, and then, you know, it is interesting that as these programs get off the ground, as other cities, and instead of reinventing the wheel locally,
right.
and
right.
then join their population pools
right.
to existing structures, and that's
right.
you know that the, you know again the Costco approach holds true: the bigger the buyer, the better the price.
Right, because all the Costco, it's not just one Costco store doing this; all the Costco stores do it together.
That's right.
Okay, let's wrap up by bringing it back to the beginning and talk about the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights and what kind of things you're going to be doing going forward to flesh out the drug program
mm-hmm.
and possibly to move into some other areas and whether you're going to be involved in some of these bulk purchasing efforts in other areas as well.
Yeah, I've worked on the bulk purchasing concepts on the, back east as well, and have colleagues that are working on a similar proposal in Philadelphia. So we're looking to unite some of these city proposals together. We've actually organizationally written a ballot initiative for March of next year that would create a statewide purchasing pool
for pharmaceuticals.
For pharmaceuticals, correct. That would allow people to join the existing CalPERS purchasing pool. CalPERS right now is has a carve out drug plan for state employees and legislators, and this would allow individuals to join that purchasing pool. It's good on both ends because the larger the pool gets, the better the rate that the state pays for coverage for prescription drugs for legislators and the governor.
Right.
And the larger the pool gets, the better the rate that you and I, who might join that pool, will get as well.
What's the state of that initiative campaign?
We have a ballot initiative back from the Attorney General's office that's drafted with title and summary.
So you're going to be starting. You're going to circulate it pretty soon.
Well, the circulation for the March ballot won't start for a while, so it's a matter of doing some grassroots fundraising now to get that ready to go.
Okay.
The other and so that's one approach, and then the other would be looking at health insurance costs, both at the city level as well. Once you start purchasing collaboratives for prescription drugs, the next step, obvious step, would be to applying it for health insurance.
So, in fact, the structure that's being set up and the relationships that are being created could then migrate over to the next step.
Right. And, obviously, the complexity level increases as you deal with more and more products, but starting
right.
with prescription drugs makes sense because that's where the greatest cost increases are, but then applying the concept
right.
to health insurance is, in a measured step, it is certainly, I think, doable in the foreseeable future.
How important is public education in all this?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, one of the things that it kind of makes a visceral sort of logic is that the more people band together, the better the price. So, and that includes not only uninsured people, but insured people.
Right.
Your insurance status in healthcare doesn't matter. The key concept is that we all say when everyone's insured, when we're all part of the same big purchasing pool.
Well, we haven't mentioned car insurance, which of course is a big expense for everyone in California.
Right, well, car insurance, now our organization back in 1988 wrote Prop 103, which requires the auto insurers to be regulated by the insurance commissioner, and that process has worked quite well. It saved drivers in the state of California about $23 billion.
Okay.
And that helps keep the overhead costs down for the auto insurers. Similar concept, I think, can be applied in healthcare, where you can have both a regulation of their overhead costs and then a bulk purchasing pool to
right.
negotiate for the best price. These are sort of bookends
right.
to control the out-of-control healthcare and commodity markets.
Use your imagination. How far could this go, and how much benefit could be delivered to millions of people through an aggressive program of bulk purchasing?
Well, think about it this way.
Things.
At its very basic points, the Canadian government and in countries like England and Ireland, when they look at prescription drugs, not at the healthcare end, but prescription drugs, they're essentially our bulk purchasing. They're negotiating a discount in terms of Canada on behalf of 30 million Canadians. They receive a discount of about 60 to 70%. Well, the U.S., just looking at the U.S., has 300 million people.
Right.
So if we had the Department of Veteran Affairs or the Medicare, one of these entities or a quasi-public board, to negotiate rates on behalf of all 300 million Americans just for prescription drugs, we're clearly going to get a much better rate than the Canadians. And we should, because, you know, the U.S. can do marketplace strategies like bulk purchasing probably better than anyone else.
Right.
It's a matter of the political will at the national level, which hasn't been there. However, again, the tipping point, as you mentioned, starting locally and banding cities together one after another, that is a sort of the bubble-up effect to replace the fact there hasn't been leadership nationally. And I think that, you know, it clearly would be a lot faster if we did bulk purchasing at the federal level, but by banding cities together and moving toward a national purchasing pool for prescription drugs, will be an incredible buying power and would have tremendous impacts on keeping drugs at their fair price.
All right. I want to thank you for all your efforts for explaining it and explaining them to us today on California Politics Today. And we'll look forward to talking to you in the future as this process goes forward.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.